Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fox Sports Radio. I got to clean up my area. I just recorded an awesome podcast. A buddy of mine named Phil Hickey. I play with at Notre Dame. He's gone on to develop the whole Angry Birds world, right? Like he did the whole head of the marketing department. Like it's pretty awesome. That's the All Ball podcast that'll drop tomorrow. I think you will really, really enjoy that. This is the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. And look, I'm going to do something which I don't mind doing it. I don't mind at all, right? Don't mind doing it at all. But I do think that sometimes people are a little hesitant to toot their own horn. I will not. We'll talk about the Patriots, where they are, and how we told you they would get where they are. Plus, we got Brandon Whedon, we got Kevin Clark, we got Aaron Nagler's going to join us. Everybody's talking about the Packers picking up a wide receiver before the deadline. Like, I seem to be missing something. I don't think their offense is the issue. Danny Woodhead will join us. Former, I guess you call him running back, just hybrid. Unbelievable personal story. I don't know if you remember his personal story. And we'll get his thoughts on a lot of things, including Tom Brady, which is where I want to start. So we do this thing where so much of life, so much of sports is not just about what you achieve. A lot of it is about what you have achieved and what the expectations are. I think most of us thought Tom Brady would work on some level in Tampa. I mean, let's just be honest. Tampa was a whisker away from making the playoffs last year, and their quarterback had 30 interceptions. 30! So the thought was, you tinker a little bit with the offensive line, you continue to develop the defense, you add in Tom Brady, and you're going to be better, right? That's a reasonable thing to think. Now, the Buccaneers have looked really good the last 2 weeks. They lit up the Raiders and what was supposed to be a Sunday night game became a Sunday afternoon game. They beat, after falling behind 10-0, they beat up on the Green Bay Packers, handing them their only loss of the season. So what do? Because of the expectations, because of the disappointing start with the Saints, because it's Tom Brady, we have conversations like this one from Marcus Spears on GetUp, where Marcus Spears says Tom Brady is the MVP. Colin Cowherd, who precedes my show, Tom Brady is the MVP. Yahoo Sports, Brady is incredibly in the MVP race. Okay, we need to breathe a little bit. We need to inhale, we need to exhale. Tom Brady against the Raiders and Chargers, okay, two of the last three games, 9 touchdowns. Tom Brady against the 5 other opponents, 9 touchdowns. Now, it's fine to put like, look, you know, that's how anybody's stats are, that you have good games, you have bad games, you have games in which the defense dictates you got to take shots downfield, you have games in which you got to hand the football off, that's fine. But the idea that Tom Brady has really 2 very good games against the Raiders team that didn't know if they were going to play, against the Chargers team, which I love, but they're without Derwin James. And for that game, they were without 10 starters due to injury and COVID. 10. Can we pump the brakes on the Tom Brady is the MVP? Look, last year they had a quarterback that threw for 5,000 yards, who's the 3rd-string quarterback in New Orleans. So it's obvious that there is weaponry there to throw to, and they've made that weaponry better. What does an MVP, the most valuable player? Now, if you want to tell me, and this is the LeBron James, the rising tide lifts all ships because he's so good, because his reputation is so good, because he works so hard, everybody else is doing better. Okay. But if you want to tell me that he's the single best player in the league or he's doing the most with the least in the league, the answer is no, he's not. There is no calculation that you can make that tells me that Tom Brady is doing the most with the least. I mean, dude, look back to last year and you tell me. Right? Last year, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they started out the year with a huge win. Kind of the opposite of this year, right? And that's really kind of what it is. Last year, the Buccaneers, they ended up at 7-9 on the season. Last year, the Buccaneers had Jameis Winston, who, as I said, threw for 5,000 yards. They lost to the San Francisco 49ers, who went to the Super Bowl and lost. They beat the Carolina Panthers. They lost to the Giants. They beat the Rams. There were some ups. There were some downs. They went through a stretch where they won 5 out of 6 games. During that stretch, they beat the Arizona Cardinals. They beat the Detroit Lions on the road. They beat the Atlanta Falcons on the road, who were red hot at the time. Like, they were playing some really good football. They have good football in them. But if you took Tom Brady off of this team and you put Jameis Winston back on this team, it stands to reason they'd probably be right around that 7-9 and 8-8 mark. What is the most valuable player? We've seen what happens when Aaron Rodgers gets hurt. The Green Bay Packers have no chance. We've seen what happens. We haven't seen what happens if Russell Wilson gets hurt, but the idea is they would have no chance. And oh yeah, by the way, like, we've seen the difference between when Lamar Jackson became the quarterback, and I'm not a huge Lamar Jackson guy in terms of all time. Even you go to the Kansas City Chiefs last year and you can tell me that they were relatively successful when they didn't have Pat Mahomes. The idea that Brady is what Mahomes is kind of laughable because he's had 2 explosive games. He's played 3 teams with above 500 records, and their team is 1-2. There is no statistical performance that shows you. There aren't honestly the wins and losses. The team is already pretty well constructed. There is a path, or there is at least a blueprint of what they would look like if you didn't have them. Granted, would not be considered maybe the best team in the NFL. But the idea that Tom Brady has gone from, does he have anything in the tank, to he's the MVP, kind of laughable right now. I love Tom Brady. I think he's terrific. I think he's been terrific for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But the idea that he's the MVP because they've won a couple of games and he threw 9 touchdown passes against the Chargers and the Raiders, 2 teams that probably don't make the playoffs, I'm sorry, I just can't do it. Compare that to Pat Mahomes, who takes on the Baltimore Ravens, who were widely considered at the time the best team in football, a dominating defense, and lights them up. Who do you think's been better? Right? Who's better? Yes, Aaron Rodgers on that day was bad. Also, by the way, proves his value. If he doesn't play at a high level, the Green Bay Packers aren't a very good football team. And we all know what the Seattle Seahawks are. They live and die by Russell Wilson. The only time they lose a game is when Russell Wilson throws 3 interceptions. I think maybe the strongest point you can make in Tom Brady not being the MVP in terms of his play on the football field is his 2 best games statistically, they beat bad teams. When they beat the Green Bay Packers, he was fine. You just have to lose the game because he's not the most valuable player. He's not the only reason that they win. So this is not Gottlieb hating on Tom Brady. This is just me going, can we slow down? Right? He went from being a mid to low mid-pack quarterback in the NFL to, you know what, maybe he's still a top 10 quarterback in this league. Tom Brady's had a great career. He's a good player. The questions are about what he does in the second half of the season when he gets tired and what could he do with a bad roster. What could he do? Like, people are down on Matt Stafford because Matt Stafford doesn't win. Like, dude, Matt Stafford balled out. Carson Wentz has balled. How do you think he would look with four backup or third string offensive linemen like Carson Wentz has been dealing with and all backup and practice squad wide receivers? So I'm not telling you that the Buccaneers aren't awesome. They are. I'm not telling you that Tom Brady isn't playing better football. He is. And I'm not telling you that he hasn't had an incredible, the most successful modern day football career. He has. But he's playing with a loaded roster, tremendous defensive front, good coordinators on both sides, and he hasn't been the cause of their biggest wins.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. We got Thursday Night Football tonight. You're like, oh man, I had totally forgotten. You're like, yeah. We kind of went back into our quarantine days, right? We're like, ah, no sports. One day, no sports. So we're left with Carolina, who, better than we thought, right? Taking on Atlanta, worse than we thought. And, you know, what's interesting is, if I were to tell you, if I were to ask you, like, who's having a good year, I think you would say that Teddy Bridgewater's having a better year than Matt Ryan. But there's, you know, I think Matt Ryan's actually having an outstanding year. And at 1-6, you think of the leads that they've lost. Some of that is on, you know, the offense. You got to keep scoring. But a lot of that is on their just awful defense. And then last week, you got to put it on Todd Gurley, their defense, but also Todd Gurley, where Matt Ryan clearly is telling him that you don't want to score. Right? There's audio and video evidence of Matt Ryan saying, don't score. Don't score. Just get the first down and don't score. You know what Todd Gurley did? He scored. Let's get to Kevin Clark. He joins us from The Ringer. It's the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. I mean, it did look like he lost his balance and maybe forgot. But in your mind, when you're thinking, don't score, don't score, don't score, why did Todd Gurley score?
Force of habit, I guess. I mean, I think it's the funniest photo I've seen maybe in the last few years in football to see Jamie Collins and all of the Lions throwing up their hands in celebration when the opposing player scores. That should tell you you've screwed up. It looked like, yeah, he lost balance a little bit. Maybe he was just trying to get to the 1 yard line. We've seen that before. It's happened in the Super Bowl, obviously, against the Patriots with the Giants. And I think that running backs, I don't know. Maybe they just want to score so badly their brain takes over at some point. But it was definitely one of the dumbest decisions I've seen this year.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Okay, so what do you think? Do you think that Atlanta will get rid of Matt Ryan?
Not right now. Rich McKay, when he took over, he is the team president, but he was the GM at one point. Obviously, he was in Tampa before that. Longtime personnel guy. He said they're not going to trade players for picks. You have to believe him at this point. I think maybe on the second tier you'll see some of those guys go, but not Matt Ryan, not Julio Jones. You know, you want the GM to make those decisions and just sort of see where they're at. I think with Atlanta, that could go either way. You could hire an established coach and try to get Matt Ryan and Julio Jones over the hump and try to build on this veteran team, or you tear the whole thing down. I think the cap stuff is a nightmare right now. To take dead cap charges for Matt Ryan or Julio Jones, those guys, I mean, that would put them over when they're already going to be over. I don't think they're alone in having cap problems next year, but I definitely think we have an expensive team like that. You have to tread very, very carefully when it comes to the rebuild and not make a decision just based on the next couple of weeks.
There were some that believed that the Lions would ultimately move on from Matt Stafford. They're 3-3, and I will grant you that they're very fortunate to beat Atlanta last week, but they should have won week one of the season when they collapsed. And DeAndre Swift, dropped the ball in the end zone. All right, so what do we make? You know, Patricia, who is wildly just hated by the media, they are three and three. They got the Colts at home. What do we make of the Lions?
Well, they weren't as bad as we thought they were, but they're still not very good. And I kind of feel like with Patricia in no man's land right now, as far as just his future goes, if he goes 9-7, do they keep him? I don't know. Bob Quinn has not been a particularly good GM there. I just don't see a lot of talent on that roster. I think Matt Stafford is still playing pretty well. I mean, I think he certainly had his low points this year. It's not vintage Stafford, but he's not a disaster either. And so what do I make of the Lions? I think they're an okay team that can beat a lot of teams. but I just don't see them competing for anything meaningful this year. I still think Matt Patricia is, I'm sorry to buy into this narrative, but I still think Matt Patricia is a pretty bad coach in general. I think he proved that in New England. I just don't think he's very good DC. I don't think he's proven himself in Detroit. And so I don't have high expectations for them. They can win games if they should. I mean, obviously, when Atlanta's trying to give you the game, they took it, which is a sign of at least some competence. But I think generally I'm not expecting much of them this year.
All right. The game of the week is Steelers-Ravens. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. I think everybody in football is like, man, this is a hell of a game. Yet I don't know why it's not – I don't know why it doesn't feel as big as it should feel. Maybe it's that it's not a Sunday night game. I'm not sure. Okay, so let's start with the Ravens. Yeah. Here they are at 5-1. Obviously, they didn't look good one time against Kansas City Chiefs, but they didn't look good against Chiefs last year. Now we see them on their home field against the Pittsburgh Steelers. How do we think they match up and Lamar matches up with the Steelers defense?
It's a great question. So, first of all, when you talk about how it doesn't feel like a big game, you know, Ryan Shazier works for us at The Ringer, and he was on our podcast today, and he said that as from a Steelers standpoint, he still is a Steelers fan, obviously. He's thinking more about the Thanksgiving game in a couple of weeks rather than this game, because this matchup is going to either be replayed or close to being replayed in January, and he wants to see them beat the Ravens closer to the playoffs than now. So I think that's an interesting point. Obviously, it's not a primetime game, so there's a lot that goes into it. So that's kind of the reason there's not much shine here, is that we know these teams will see each other again, okay, at least once after this. So from the Ravens standpoint, I'm intrigued to see what this front seven against of Pittsburgh looks like against Lamar Jackson, because there's speed on that front seven, T.J. Watt, Bud Dupree. I think that there's some question about how you get after Lamar, and I think that the Steelers have those answers. I'm intrigued to see it and kind of what that looks like. We haven't seen Lamar in his current elite state, which started obviously at the beginning of last year. We haven't seen that against a really good Steelers team. Last year, obviously, they took a step back. They were not competing for anything after Roethlisberger got hurt. So to see Blitzberg against Lamar Jackson is one of the most fascinating, just from a football schematic standpoint, matchups I've seen all year.
Okay, then what about Pittsburgh and their offense against the Ravens defense? Like, the Ravens defense has been outstanding, obviously, with the exception of Kansas City, but, you know, they have a freak of nature at quarterback and a freak of nature at wide receiver, and it felt like a bad matchup for the Ravens, more so than they're a bad team. What does the matchup look like for the Ravens against the Steelers offense?
Listen, Roethlisberger can make any throw, and I think we sort of, you know, I think we've all gotten tired of 20 years of Ben Roethlisberger, where we kind of, he's almost underrated at this point. And so I think that we forget how dynamic this can be. Now he's got Chase Claypool. Now he's got Dante Johnson, if he's healthy. And I think that there's just so much they can do. And you know, one of the things, again, going back to Shazier, one of the things that Roethlisberger is really good at is he's going to get hit and he's going to be fine as long as he stays healthy. He does not get rattled. You know, no one uses blitzes right now more effectively in the AFC than Baltimore. They're going to get after Roethlisberger, and Roethlisberger is the kind of quarterback who can take it, and he can get up off the turf and throw a touchdown on the next play. So I think that this is an old school, tough Sunday AFC North matchup. And what I mean by that is these guys are just going to knock the crap out of each other. I mean, these are two teams that hit hard, even behind closed doors in practice. They hit each other hard. They're going to hit, on Sunday, it's going to be a really physical game. The Steelers might have a disadvantage having played a really physical game last week against the Titans, where they were hitting the crap out of each other. But I think that this is going to come down. I know it sounds unscientific, but it's going to come down to toughness. And both these quarterbacks can get hit, because that's what these front sevens do. And then two can get back up and make the plays after. And I think that, I mean, both of these guys have a real bounce back ability, but I actually like the Steelers in this one.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Doug Gottlieb show here on Fox Sports Radio. Kevin Clark joins us from The Ringer. Okay, let's get to the Patriots. Is Cam Newton fixable?
Wow. Great question. It depends what's wrong, right? He's not throwing to the right side of his body, which suggests something's wrong. Mechanics-wise, I've heard complaints about his shoulder. People say that his feet are not aligned and all this stuff, and which suggests there's just a lot wrong with him right now. They're not going to be easy throws this year. That's what we know. Because defenses don't respect anybody's ability to get open in New England. They're playing defenses that can basically take away that dynamic run game we saw in week one and even week two. And so I don't know. Cam Newton has to progress significantly. because there's nothing that's going to be easy for the Patriots. And I don't think Cam Newton is going to be healthy enough or dynamic enough to make things happen in a way that will make life easier for a guy like N'Keal Harry who can't get open down the field. So he's fixable in so much that he'll be better than what he was in the last 2 weeks. And I think that they'll get to 8 or 9 wins. They're not going to compete for anything. They're not going to win they're certainly not going to compete for the AFC East or a playoff game or a playoff win or anything like that. They are right now chasing confidence. I think they can get there, but they're chasing nothing beyond that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I feel like they're not achieving. They're just packing it in, right? Edelman gets his knee cleaned up, and I think, you know, they'd be smart to move on from Gilmore, not because he's not a great player, but they get as many picks as you possibly can for him. Be interesting to see what happens. What are your expectations for Tua?
Well, I mean, I think they're pretty high only because we've seen what Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow have been able to do. And I really like Tua, and I think that the infrastructure there in Miami is pretty good. So I actually think, you know, in talking to some smart people this week, the left-handed quarterback thing is actually probably more important than we give it credit for, because it's not just you're flipping the offense and maybe you flip some of the plays and this receiver is playing on the other side of the field. But I really do. You know, Chris Collinsworth talked about this as well. He played with the lefty quarterback. Is the ball does tail a little bit differently. We talked about that with lefty punters as well, where the ball spins differently. And so I think there might be a couple of hiccups as far as that goes. That will be resolved quickly. And so maybe there's a little bit of stagnation there this week. But as far as this season and the next few years, I mean, this is sky high for Tua. You know, comparisons to Drew Brees a little bit, I've heard from some smart people. So I think the Dolphins can be really good. I think the fact that they've built this so smartly, they had the Texans picks next year. I mean, this is a genuine contender to take over in the AFC along with the Bills once this Patriots run is over.
Do you believe the Packers are legitimately interested in adding a wide receiver?
Well, yes, perfect world if the value is right. I would say that, you know, listen, Brian Gutekunst, I talked to him a couple weeks ago. He is from the Ted Thompson school, and that means building from within, using free agency and trades very, very, very sparingly.
Yep.
And I don't necessarily think they're going to go out and take a huge swing in the middle of the season unless there was incredible value, unless Will Fuller is available for nothing and the Texans just want to get rid of him. So is there going to be a huge swing? Probably not. Will they try to get a receiver if it fits? Yes, of course, because, you know, you look at the Bucs, and I'm not necessarily sold on Antonio Brown being a great acquisition, but if he's able to stay on the field, that changes the entire landscape of the NFC. And if you're the Packers and you feel like you can win the Super Bowl this year, or get to a Super Bowl this year, you have to figure out a way to get at least one more weapon. And so I think they'll try to find value, but I don't expect a big swing just because this organization has operated the same way for a long time. I don't think they're going to change this year.
Okay, Tom Brady adds Antonio Brown. That's a big weapon, right? That's a big weapon.
Yeah.
I got two Tampa questions. First one is, do you believe he's the MVP as of now?
Yes.
Really?
And I think that we'll see. You know, he's still got to play some primetime games, and we'll see what happens, you know, when Antonio Brown gets on the field and all that stuff. But, yeah, I think he is. You know, Russell Wilson played a very strange game, a very uncharacteristic game on Sunday night, throwing that awful interception to Isaiah Simmons. He kind of let the Vance Joseph blitz get to him a little bit over the course of the game and started making bad decisions. So right now, I think nothing – it's like college football, right, with the Heisman, right, Doug, where, you know, you play badly in primetime and you knock yourself out of the race for a couple of weeks. And I feel like that's Russell Wilson right now. And I feel like Aaron Rodgers did that a couple weeks ago against Tampa. So right now, the pecking order for me is Tom Brady number one. We haven't even seen.
Play poorly on primetime against the Bears?
That was what, five other bad performances ago with the other MVP candidates, right? That's the funny thing. We saw Mahomes kind of struggle against Buffalo. We've seen Lamar struggle. We've seen Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson struggle. I mean, it's like a round robin. Everybody's knocking each other out, and we're just going to keep turning the wheel until one of these guys just stops screwing up.
How likely is Mike McCarthy to make it to year two?
I'm looking at this team right now. The Jerry Jones says, well, I've got my guy, all that stuff. You hired a guy who's supposed to come in here and build on what's already there and to take the next step. And instead, it looks like they're going to have to start tearing parts of it down. And not all of it, but parts of it. And I don't understand if your philosophy was, we want an experienced guy to take it to the next level. I don't understand how they can do the exact opposite and you're still happy with it. So to answer your question, I think he might. I wouldn't. If I own the Cowboys, I mean, certainly things would be different. A lot of things would be different if I own the Cowboys, but I'd probably be in a bigger living room right now. But I think that generally I would not change philosophies and say, hey, Mike McCarthy, you're the one to take us through a rebuild, because that's not what you hired him for. So I would have moved on from him, yeah.
Kevin Clark from The Ringer. Download his stuff. Go to The Ringer. Awesome site. Just incredible information as well. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the football tonight.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Hope you're having a great day, man. Getting ready for football tonight on Fox. There's a narrative out there that the Green Bay Packers need more playmakers. Okay. And we had Aaron Nagler on earlier today. He's from Cheesehead TV, and he basically said, like, look, if somebody wants to give one away with a minimal contract, you know, like, all right. We keep doing this thing where we're like, well, Aaron Rodgers doesn't have enough weapons. Doesn't have enough weapons. Okay. Look, we can go back all you want. All you want. And say it was a mistake to trade up for Jordan Love. He hasn't, by all accounts, he hasn't been great, hasn't even been good when he has practiced. But he is what you would call in television a futures buy, right? Where you buy, they do this in TV, I don't know if you know this, where if you're doing something else, you're under contract, they can buy your rights for the future and own them. And basically it was like, look, if you're going to do TV, you're going to have to do it with this network and figure it out. And they will pay you an amount, I mean, while you're still doing something else, so that they own your rights for the future. Jordan Love was at least 2 years away. Then you have no rookie camps, OTAs, no real offseason program. And of course he's looked behind, and you're comparing him to Aaron Stinkin' Rodgers, who's arguably the best quarterback in the sport. But here's what we're doing is we're like, well, they should have taken a wide receiver then. You could have taken T. Higgins then. And statistically, T. Higgins has done quite well, right? He has 27 catches on the season. He's averaging 15.2 yards a carry. He's a big play, long, rangy, run deep. I'll throw it up. You jump up and catch it sort of cat. Not sure if you're aware of how this works, though. If you play T. Higgins, that means that Marcus Valdes-Scantling doesn't play as much, or Alan Lazard doesn't play as much, or Devontae Adams doesn't play as much. And they, you know, at the time, they put together the map and said, we would rather have the potential quarterback of the future not play than get another wide receiver that we might or might not use. I heard Colin Cowherd earlier today be critical of the fact that in the second round, they drafted a running back. Okay? That running back's name is A.J. Dillon. Now, A.J. Dillon, by all accounts, has been better than people thought. Finally getting some carries. And, oh, yeah, by the way, anybody realize that Aaron Jones didn't play last week because he's been a little nicked up? He might not play this week. Why do they have the luxury of doing that? Because they drafted another running back. Oh, yeah, by the way, Aaron Jones, he's going to need a new contract in the offseason. I mean, what better leverage can you possibly have than, look, we love you. Aaron Jones had 20 touchdowns in his last 21 regular season games. But we're not going to move heaven and earth for a running back and give you some ridiculous deal when we got other guys. And we can save money and then spend it and then maybe draft another running back. That's a well-run organization. But more than anything, Aaron Rodgers has 17 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Those 2 interceptions are on him. And when they did lose that game to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, when they lost that game to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they weren't beaten because they didn't have enough wide receivers. They're beaten because they couldn't protect Aaron Rodgers. When they lost to the San Francisco 49ers in the regular and postseason last year, it was because they couldn't protect Aaron Rodgers and couldn't stop the run of the San Francisco 49ers had nothing to do with wide receivers. Like, if that philosophy held to be true, and I understand there's not other linemen out there. They're just not. I mean, if so, the Eagles, the Cowboys, the Chargers, I mean, you got to go through the teams that all need offensive line help that would be able to go get it. But, like, wide receivers? Playmakers? Devontae Adams is an elite wide receiver. Alan Lazard's a legit number two. Robert Tonyan's, like, the favorite, when healthy, favorite target of Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Jones has 20 touchdowns in 21 regular season games, and they got enough dudes all over. Like, that's not going to win. No added wide receiver is going to win them games if you have to give up something. Maybe they take on a bad contract and give up a late round pick. But the idea that the Packers are a playmaker away from winning a Super Bowl, you haven't watched them when they played. Number of playmakers has not been the issue. Doesn't mean they won't take one if they can steal one. But the idea that they need one to compete, that would be really far afield from the reality. Danny Woodhead has had an amazing rise as a football player, right? And his podcast is perfectly named, Out of Nowhere. He's kind enough to spend some time with us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Danny, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. How the heck are you?
Man, it's been a long time since you first made it to the league. I felt like I was your first interview. Now you just do this stuff on the side just for fun because you're swimming in money. Wait, are they coming after you? Where are you right now?
Omaha, Nebraska, man, where people, just live the good life. I mean, that's what we're known for, Nebraska, the good life. And we get a little bit of cold weather, so that sucks. But I can still get a little bit of golf in, so don't worry about me.
Yeah, number of days you play golf per week now?
I mean, it depends. Like, it depends on if it's 40 degrees or not. Because if it's 40 degrees, you know, about four times a week. If it's, 50 to 60, probably five. So I play a decent amount.
Are you good?
I'm good enough to keep enjoying it. I've made it into the pluses, so that's good. But I'm no pro.
Pluses is pretty good. That's taking money from everybody. That's taking money from everybody. I want to get your thoughts on the league currently, on Brady, who used to be your quarterback, on Rivers, who used to be your quarterback, in a second. But I do want to, for people who've forgotten, you were at Shadron State, like, out of high school. Did you have any offers? Like, what? How big were you out of high school?
Out of high school, I was actually, like, I don't know if I was 5'8", 190, or I think it was 190 is what I weighed, and then I ended up bumping up to about 200 my freshman year. But, I mean, I wasn't the smallest. Everyone made it seem like I was, like, 5'6", 150 pounds. But I didn't have any offers outside of Division II. Or there were some D1AAs that were going to offer me, but I told them no go because I wanted to go to Shadron to play with my brother, and they had a good program. So I basically decided to do that, and there were a couple Division I's that came late, never offered. Wyoming decided I wasn't good enough, and obviously a whole slew of other teams too.
I guess here's the question. Like, you were the Nebraska Player of the Year, the Omaha World Player of the Year. And I wonder, like, had Nebraska come in and offered you, right? And let's say your special teams and, you know, one of a slew of running backs, what's the likelihood that your career ends up like it is today? Like, you as opposed to going somewhere where you were an absolute star?
I really don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where just as a competitor, I think if they would have offered me a scholarship, I think, I'm on fair playing field, Like, if I walk on, there's no chance I'm getting a chance. It doesn't matter if I was better than someone, I'm not playing. Nebraska wasn't all that good at that time, as we know, and they haven't been for a while. So it might have been tough. But I think, it's one of those things. I think I would have still done well. I don't know if it ends up the same way, but it doesn't really matter because it ended up how it ended up, and I'm very thankful for it.
No. I totally get that, but it's like, you try and tell kids all the time, like, you go somewhere you're going to play, right? Go somewhere like...
Oh, yeah. Well, people always ask me, like, well, why didn't you walk on at Nebraska? I'm like, I don't know, because 95 guys have to get hurt before I play if I walk on there. You know, like that's what it is. And I understood that. There's a lot of guys that go in, and it does work out for a few guys, but for the most part, if you walk on, guys don't understand, you will never play. You just won't unless a lot of people get hurt because they don't want to play you. It's just like in the league. Are you going to play your undrafted free agent or are you going to play your first rounder? You're going to play your first rounder because you invested money in them. It's the same like concept, and people that I don't think understand that.
How hard is it to make it in the NFL?
I mean, it's one of those. It's obviously the numbers are stacked against anyone. But the thing you have to realize is everyone's talented. Everyone was a star at their school. And it's like once you get to the league, I think it's more mental than anything. It's like, hey, make sure you know every play. Make sure you know every position that you could be on the field. That's the thing I learned with Mangini in New York and obviously Bill in New England is, man, even though I'm a halfback, in all the empty sets or just – Even when there's a running back in the backfield, like just know the concepts because what if you get thrown in that situation? Well, the way I got elevated onto an active roster was because I got elevated as a receiver because a bunch of receivers got hurt and they knew that I knew the offense. And that's kind of how things I didn't do much in New York offensively.
No, but you were number 80. People forget you were number 83. Like you were you had to be a wide receiver.
Yes. And like that's the thing is, man, I realized, you know, early on because of the coaching staffs that I went through, it's like, just know everything because that can, coaches say in the NFL all the time, the more you can do. It might be in special teams. It might mean just know other positions. Well, I took that to heart, and I honestly believe it would have been really hard for me to break through if I didn't know what to do.
But also, and this is where it's really hard, when you're a star in college, you know, you don't necessarily always, not every guy pays attention to, like, pass protection, right? But if you're going to make it as a running back or as a wide receiver, somebody who slides into that backfield, you got to be able to understand everything about pass protection, and then you got to be able to actually do the job. What's that like to learn at that level?
I mean, it's hard because you're also dealing with what they would call sub defenses, so nickel dime defenses, which changes everything in protection. Not a lot of people know that. So many, you know, fantasy owners are like, "Gosh, why doesn't this running back play on third downs?" Well, probably because he doesn't know how to protect. Probably he doesn't know how to catch the ball. He doesn't know how to do some of those little things in substitute defenses. And it's not just one of those plug and play. Like, you talk to any coach, a sub running back has to know everything, has to know all the protections, has to know when you're supposed to scan backside, when not to, where the mic point is, where just all the different factors. And then, oh, by the way, if no one's coming, you better get out and you're out really fast because if it's a zone, you need to take up a zone. You need to be an option. Or if it's man-to-man and everyone's covered, you better get open. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on to playing a sub running back. That's why a lot of rookies don't play sub running back. They don't play on third down because it's just a lot to handle.
Yeah, yeah. And then you know, you got veteran guys who you mentioned special teams. You know, the old franchise backs struggle. They won't play special teams, right? There's certain things they don't do. So that's a time in which you can you can actually get onto the football field. Like there's interesting parts of football which I don't think enough people actually explain to, like, you know, the common folk, if you will, about why somebody is who they are and why they do and how, like, you know, I've been told that the thing about Gronk that made him special is it's not the pass catching, it's that you can actually leave him on a defensive end and you're okay. He's that good. He's been that good a blocker. Is that fair?
And more than anything, Gronk, at least when he was in New England, and my guess is the same now, because Gronk is not someone to change. But he also isn't going to complain if he's blocking in the run game. Like, he's still going to go out and do his best, you know. And there's a lot of tight ends. I mean, that's just part of it. A lot of them are kind of receiving tight ends, and they just don't really want to block. And it's hard to find the Rob Gronkowski's, you know, the George Kittles of the world that like enjoy it and are like going to be able to push a defensive lineman around or go on double teams with linemen. Like, that's just not very common anymore, and especially because, you know, the spread offenses and guys just wanting to catch the ball and score touchdowns. I get that, but you don't find those guys that will do both that much anymore.
No, you really don't. What's your thoughts on Tom? Obviously, you've played with him a ton. You know him really well. On what is evolving there in Tampa?
Well, I mean, you look at it, and I mean, at least the people that played in New England or have an idea of, you know, a lot of football. The first few weeks, I mean, it was very not New England type offense.
Yes.
You know, like Gronk was staying in blocking all the time, which he can do. But if I'm someone paying him $9 million and I know that he's 6'7", 265 pounds or whatever the heck he is, and I know that he has oven mitts for hands, I'm probably going to put him on some over routes and seam routes. Well, he didn't seem to be running or corner routes. He just didn't. Maybe I'm wrong, and I could be totally off base, but it didn't seem like he was doing that stuff. Whereas the last couple of weeks, it seems like he's been getting a little bit more intentional on getting him involved. Well, Doug, what does that do? That opens up everything for everyone else. And I understand that, you know, BA hasn't had a lot. He just hasn't had a lot of tight ends that are great, great receivers. Well, when you have that, it terrifies the defense because then you don't know who to cover. Oh, we're going to put two guys on Gronk. Oh, you are? Well, we have Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Scotty Miller. Oh, by the way, in a couple weeks, we have Antonio Brown. So what are you going to do? Right now they don't have a running back that really is in that role, or they don't have a James White. They don't have someone like that.
Yeah.
But now that would be – if you had something like that, it just wouldn't be fair. So it's in a way, it's a really good thing.
I point out Danny Woodhead is available. I don't know.
Well, no, I'm not available, man. I have 14 clubs in my bag, and that's the only thing I'm available to. That's the only sport I'm available to. But it's just – it's hard. A defensive coordinator can't – like, how do you game plan? Like, oh, we're going to play man. Oh, you are? So who are you going to put on Gronk? Who are you going to put on the slot? Who are you going to put on the two outside guys? Running back, they don't have that right now as a receiving back.
Yeah.
But still, you have four guys that it's impossible to cover.
Okay, so I was talking about the Packers earlier. And, if you're the Packers, I mean, look, when they have Aaron Jones, they have that running back. They obviously, obviously Davante Adams is super high-level guy. He loves Tanyan. Lazard is coming to his own. They got Valdez-Scantling. There's talk about them going out and getting another guy. Do they need another guy?
I don't know if they necessarily need another guy because they have five guys that can get open. You have a running back like Aaron Jones in the passing game. My thing is, it's just like, well, what are you going to do, defense? Are you going to play nickel? Because if you play nickel, there's still no one that can cover Aaron Jones, but also then the run's an option. If you play dime, I'm running all day on you with Aaron Jones. If you play base, it's just a throw-a-thon. Because all the NFL is, and I think like everyone gets the whole Patriots system mixed up, all they're doing is playing mismatches. I mean, they have a tough go right now. But I'm saying all they're doing is mismatches. It's like, oh, okay, you want to put a linebacker on Julian Edelman. All right, well, I guess we're going to throw it. We're going to throw it until you don't put a linebacker on. Remember, what game was it? It was the Rams game, the Super Bowl. And he just kept running a little return route, a shallow route. Well, why? Well, they had linebackers on, which is just not advantageous for you as a defense. So we're going to keep doing that. Oh, you're going to put all these DBs on the field? Okay, well, we're going to run. I remember my first year there. Teams started playing dime against us, and I think it's because they thought I was a receiver because I was with the Jets before. So what we did is we just started running zone, outside zone, because you can't – offensive linemen are going to win when it comes to blocking defensive backs, and it just makes things so difficult. It's just like, let's play mismatches, and that's what the Packers can do. That's what Tampa Bay can do. The teams that can play mismatches and just make a defensive coordinator have nightmares and not know what to do, those are teams that are going to destroy you.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Man, this is so good. I mean, I could talk ball with you for a long, long time.
Ball, that's one thing, you know, I do miss. I don't miss getting hit, but I love talking ball schemes and just like how to beat a team. Now, I don't know anything defensively, but about offensively, how I'm going to scheme against you.
Right.
Like, that's my favorite thing.
No, I mean, look, basketball-wise, I'm the exact same thing, right? Like, find the problem, solve the problem. And that's one of the things about the Patriots is they've never been the, let's just stick to what we do. It's been the, let's figure out a way to solve the problem. It feels like probably trade Gilmore. I don't know. It feels like that, you know, like I saw Edelman's getting what appears to be some sort of elective cleanup on the knee. I feel like if Tom was there, he'd probably put that off to the offseason. But with all these guys opted out, Cam's arm is shot. It feels like this is a bridge year, just getting them through to whatever's next. Is that a fair read from the outside?
I don't know if it's a fair read or not. It does. I know exactly what you're saying. It was a tough year anyways for the defense. I mean, they had such a dominant defense that if Hightower and Chung and those guys didn't opt out, they're still that same defense. And the whole, you know, ball control and with what Cam, even if his arm shot, it would make a difference. Like, their team would be a completely different team. Now, would they be what they were with Tom? No. But and do I agree with you that Edelman's probably not getting a clean out if Tom's playing? Without a doubt. There's no chance. So it is interesting, and it's going to be interesting to see how it progresses. Who knows, though? How many times have they kind of surprised us, and then they just start winning games, and you're like, what the heck's going on? Like, who knows? I don't know, but I totally understand, and I don't know if I fully agree yet, because we'll see. After a couple weeks, then it might be, yeah, but you might be onto something.
Would DK Metcalf run you down in your prime?
There's a lot of people, like, I have a lot of confidence in, you know, my speed, or I had, not my speed now.
Right.
I don't even know. I don't even know what that is. But DK Metcalf, I don't know if he was made by a computer or what it was. I mean, it's a freaking really good computer if he was.
You ever seen the movie? You ever seen the movie Weird Science?
I haven't. I feel like I need to.
Well,
now. Okay.
So you're much younger than me, right? But
yep.
in the 80s and 90s, a guy named John Hughes, he made Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Pretty in Pink, Breakfast Club. He made Beethoven, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Uncle Buck. These are all his movies, right?
Yep. I remember Uncle Buck.
Okay.
Great movie.
So they're all kind of based in Chicago, whatever. Weird Science. It's like old school, like Apple IIe computer, and they put together, like, they basically cut up a bunch of magazines and they build their dream girl on a computer, and it spits out Kelly LeBrock. And that's what it feels like DK Metcalf is, right? Like, if you take a guy with size, abs, arms, hands, feet, he's a good looking dude, he's smart, right? And just like put it in a computer and then spit it out, he's basically Weird Science.
I agree. And now, do I think I could be all right maybe on like a 30 or a 40? Yeah, because with that angle that he took, I would have. Just kind of like...
He ran him down. Like that wasn't... He didn't have the angle on him. He ran him down.
No, that's what I'm saying. That angle was so bad. Like, it was so bad that Baker was fine for 30 and 40 yards. But man, I counted it. He was like 10 to 15 yards behind. And it looked like... I was worried that... Like, he was actually going to ruin the field because he was taking up so much grass. I was like, are we going to have to get the grounds crew on here? Because what he's doing is not healthy for the field. I'm big into, you know, taking care of the grass.
Sure, sure.
So he definitely, what he was doing doesn't seem real. Would I get caught by him? Without a doubt. 100%.
Out of nowhere is the podcast. He's the one and only Danny Woodhead. Danny, great catching up, dude. Hit him long and straight. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, bro.